This is KHOR 89.1 FM Story City Ames, and this is Joshua Rudenberg from Minneapolis. Hello, Iowa.
Hello, Iowa. I like that. Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm Gail Seiler, your host for today. Thanks for tuning in. We are wrapping up our spring fund drive at KHOI and inching toward our goal of $50,000. So if you value the news, interviews, and stories that you hear on Local Talk, or if you value any other shows that we have, please show that support by making a donation or becoming a member now. You can do that on our website, khoifm.org, or call 515-292-2878, or come by the station at 410 Douglas in downtown Ames. It looks like this week will bring us a mixture of sun and rain, and it will be getting warmer as the week progresses. Today will be sunny with a high of 64, dipping into 48 overnight. On Tuesday, we'll see a mix of sun and rain showers. On Wednesday and Thursday, the clouds will part somewhat, and it will be mainly sunny. Temperatures Tuesday through Thursday will rise from the 70s into the low 80s by the end of the week. By Friday, we'll have a high around 80 with a chance of showers. So seems like the story for the week is warming temperatures with a little rain and a little sun. And maybe the heat in our houses can finally stay off this week. It was quite a busy weekend in Ames. Iowa State held its commencements, and there were many proud families and friends here to celebrate with the graduates, and it was Mother's Day on Sunday. A conversation with KHOI reporter Susan Franzen last week piqued my curiosity about the origin of Mother's Day, so I did a little research on that topic. I found that a precursor to Mother's Day in the United States came from the abolitionist and suffragette Julia Ward Howe. In 1870, she wrote the Mother's Day Proclamation, a call to action that asked mothers to unite, and by that she meant to come together with other women in promoting world peace. And I was able to find a quote from her, and I'll read that now. "Let women now leave all that may be left of home for a great and earnest day of counsel with each other as to the means whereby the great human family can live in peace." The current incarnation of Mother's Day was created by Anna Jarvis in 1908, arguing that American holidays were biased toward male achievements. It became an official U.S. holiday in 1914. However, Jarvis would later denounce the holiday's commercialization and spent the latter part of her life trying to remove it from the calendar. And here's an interesting tidbit. In the United States, more phone calls are made on Mother's Day than any other day of the year. Later on today's show, we'll hear about some of the presidential campaigning going on in Iowa, and KHOI's naturalist Pat Schlarbaum will bring us one of his wonderful phenologies. But to start off, we've got Dennis Hart with news from across the state.
Thanks very much, Gail. As always, it's good to be here on this Monday. There was plenty of news around the state of Iowa last week, including word that the trial for the man accused of killing an Iowa State University student had been moved out of Story County to northeast Iowa. 22-year-old Colin Richards' trial will be held in Decorah in Winneshiek County, starting September 10th. A judge ruled that coverage of the death of Celia Barkane Arosemena by news outlets in Ames and Des Moines could have impeded Richards' right to a fair trial in Story County. Richards has pleaded not guilty. If he's convicted, he will be sentenced to life in prison. The judge said up to 120 potential jurors could be called for the trial. Prosecutors estimate the trial will last about 2 weeks. Meanwhile, there was word last week that Colin Richards was beaten by a fellow inmate inside the Story County Jail. 28-year-old Anthony English is also charged with murder. Court records showed that English and Richards fought inside a day room at the jail, that English chased Richards and punched him at least 12 times. In the world of politics last week, former 3rd District Iowa Congressman David Young announced he will try to reclaim the seat he lost to Democrat Cindy Axne last year. He told the Des Moines Register that he will run against Axne next year because, he said, people in his district have told him they're not being heard in the U.S. Congress. He said Axne should be focusing on issues such as lower taxes, a stronger economy, reducing government regulations, and securing the border. The Republican Young was first elected in 2014 and served two terms. Also last week, Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds signed a bill that gives her more power over a panel that helps select judges and justices to Iowa's top courts. The new law lets the governor make 9 appointments to the state nominating commission that helps choose state Supreme Court justices and Court of Appeals judges. That gives the governor immediate control over the 17-member panel. The commission interviews applicants and sends the governor the names of finalists to appoint as judges and justices. The previous setup gave the governor 8 appointments to the commission. And just 2 days after she signed that bill, the governor exercised her new power to name an additional member to the commission. She appointed Pella attorney Dan Hutink to the State Judicial Nominating Commission. Although he is subject to confirmation by the state Senate, the governor said Hutink will start serving immediately. The Senate has adjourned for the year and will not return to the Capitol until January. Hutink's term expires in 2024. Meanwhile, Iowa Republican U.S. Senator Joni Ernst said last week that she thinks President Trump should voluntarily release his tax returns. This after the New York Times obtained tax information that showed Trump reported losses of more than $1 billion from 1985 to 1994. The president has refused to release his tax returns. Presidential politics continued making news in Iowa last week. Democratic hopeful Beto O'Rourke showed up in Boone and said that President Trump's administration has interrupted progress that the United States was making as a place of acceptance. He said Trump and his rhetoric against immigrant and ethnic groups have heightened dehumanization in the nation. O'Rourke said he supports universal health care and ratifying the Equal Rights Amendment, but said one issue remains the most important, climate change. Another Democratic hopeful, Julian Castro, came to Ames and said he's running for president because the nation needs a new vision with new leadership. He said he wants to make the United States what he called the smartest, the healthiest, the fairest, and the most prosperous nation on earth. He said on his first day as president, he would recommit the United States to the Paris Climate Accord. He said he wants to bring back decency and integrity into the Oval Office. Meanwhile, the Iowa Department of Transportation reopened Interstate 29 for the first time in nearly 2 months. Much of the interstate has been underwater since the Missouri River flooded in mid-March. There was word last week that rainy weather was delaying Iowa farmers from planting crops this spring. The U.S. Department of Agriculture reported that just 36% of Iowa's expected corn crop had been planted. About 8% of the expected soybean crop had been planted. In addition to all the rain, chilly temperatures had slowed the emergence of crops that had been planted. And there was a report that Iowa farmers were in line to take another hit as the tariff war between the U.S. and China intensified. Prospects for improved prices are dimming given record supplies of crops, disease that's sweeping through China's pig herd and cutting soy demand, and hopes for a new U.S.-China trade deal slipping away. A spokesman for the Iowa Soybean Association said that he wasn't sure state soybean farmers could take much more. President Trump said with all that's going on, U.S. farmers would ultimately be better off, with the government possibly buying $15 billion in goods to provide humanitarian assistance to needy countries. Meanwhile, an Iowa egg farm that killed millions of chickens because of a bird flu outbreak several years ago is suing companies hired by the federal government to disinfect barns. Sunrise Farm said the chlorine dioxide gas and heat treatments used to kill the virus destroyed barn equipment, electrical wiring, production equipment, and water lines. The farm is near the northwest Iowa town of Harris. Barns there housed 4 million egg-laying hens. Still on the agriculture beat, the U.S. Department of Agriculture cut 5 Iowa cities from its short list of possible homes for 2 major research headquarters. The USDA chopped Ames, Ankeny, Council Bluffs, Des Moines, and West Des Moines from contention to become its Economic Research Service and National Institute of Food and Agriculture headquarters. The USDA wants to move the operations out of Washington, D.C. The agency's research issues such as food safety and security, nutrition assistance, trade, and rural job markets. The USDA's top locations are in Indiana, along the Kansas City region's Animal Health Corridor, and in the North Carolina Research Triangle region. Also last week, 3 children died in a crash on Interstate 80 near Coralville. 2 of the children were 11 years old, 1 was 12. All 3 were from Cedar Rapids. They died when the vehicle they were in tried to make a U-turn onto westbound lanes before it was broadsided by a semi-truck. In western Iowa, a man died after the bicycle he was riding was hit by a vehicle. The Pottawatomie County Sheriff's Office said it took place on a section of the old Lincoln Highway. In Iowa City, one person was shot and hospitalized after a burglary investigation led to an officer-involved shooting last week. No officers were injured. In Boone last week, authorities arrested 2 people in connection with a shooting near a park that led officials to lock down nearby schools for more than an hour. There was also word last week that Facebook planned to invest $400 million to build its fifth data center building in Altoona. The company entered a development agreement with the city of Altoona that will waive property taxes for 20 years on the proposed building, which will measure nearly 1 million square feet. The H-shaped building will sit next to the company's other 1 million square foot building, which is currently under construction. Under terms of the agreement, Facebook will be exempt from paying property taxes on the new building for 20 years, but will pay the city $3 per square foot, or about $3 million each year during that 20-year period. Also last week, a new report named Onawa, Iowa, a small town known for its wide main street and for its claim to the invention of the Eskimo pie ice cream treat, the poorest town in the state of Iowa. It's the only town in the state where more than one out of every four residents lives below the poverty line. Onawa's population is just under 3,000. Meanwhile, there was word that some retail tenants of the Southridge Mall in Des Moines are leaving because the mall's owner is not renewing their leases. The owner, a California-based retail company, plans to make improvements on the mall's west side. There was also word last week that Grays Lake Park in Des Moines will be closed this week as work crews resurface the majority of the trail around the lake. The park is expected to reopen June 1st. Visitors are being asked to stay out of the park during the project. There was also word last week that a Polk County woman who in 2017 promised to never again provide child care as part of a felony child endangerment sentencing agreement was warned by law enforcement this month to keep away from her former career or face new criminal charges. This after social media posts appeared to show that 51-year-old Cindy Marie Holt was advertising that she would provide care for up to five children. That's the maximum number that would let an Iowa daycare go unlicensed. Holt and her daughter had run an in-home daycare in Pleasant Hill and had left a nine-month-old girl unattended when another child bit her. Cindy Holt pleaded guilty to a felony charge and agreed not to operate a daycare again. Also last week, state officials put out a warning about a disease in dogs that could be passed on to humans. Several cases of canine brucellosis had come out of a commercial small dog breeding facility in Marion County. The sickness is known to only affect dogs and humans. Signs of the disease in a dog include infertility, abortions, and stillbirths. Symptoms for humans include fever, sweats, headaches, joint pain, and weakness. And one more animal story before I go. The story of the mountain lion that was spotted several times and in several different places in Des Moines last week. The animal was captured on video in a neighborhood near 31st Street and Interstate Highway 235. Then the lion moved into less populated areas and it seemed to be trying to avoid people. Late last week, the lion was seen again near the Des Moines airport, and after that, it was seen again. Mountain lion sightings are not that common in Iowa, but the state does get an occasional lion visitor from such states as Nebraska, South Dakota, and Wyoming. Of course, no one's sure what drew this particular mountain lion to Des Moines. And that is your summary of the week's important and strange news from around Iowa, and I'm not lying. No, I'm Dennis Hart, taking a few days off now to roam around a bit, but planning to return to this very seat on Friday with news from around Ames. In the meantime, go ahead. Have a safe, healthy, and happy week.
Thanks to Dennis for that news update. You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI, and I'm your host, Gail Seidler. National Bike to Work Week begins today, and Bike to Work Day is Friday, May 17th. This is a national initiative to promote cycling, and there are several Bike to Work events happening here in Ames this week. Mayor John Hala and Ames City Council members are kicking off Bike to Work Week by hosting a free breakfast from 7 to 9 a.m. this morning. So that's right now. You can go to Ames City Hall, and they'll be outside because the weather's nice. So why not stop by there for a free breakfast this morning as you bike to work? Bike to Work Week will end with the second annual Mayor and City Council Bike Ride. This is a group ride that will go on a 10-mile loop around Ames, and it will also begin at the City Hall next Saturday at 9 a.m. That's May 18th. No registration is required, so you can just ride by and join in that event next Saturday. As Iowa residents, we are starting to have more and more presidential candidates rolling through our state. Today, KHOI reporter Cal Halliburton brings us highlights from Elizabeth Warren's recent visit to our area.
This is Cal Halliburton reporting. You'll be hearing Senator Elizabeth Warren on Candidates with KHOI at a house party event in Iowa Falls, Iowa, Saturday, May 4th, 2019. Senator Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts was first elected in 2012, defeating an incumbent by a slim margin. She was re-elected in 2018 with more than 60% of the vote. She announced her candidacy for president in February 2019.
Every decision that gets made in Washington gets influenced by the money that flows through the place. Gets influenced not just by campaign contributions, but bought and paid for experts, think tanks. Gets touched by who can afford to hire an army of lobbyists, an army of lawyers. And that's the way, decision after decision. It favors the rich and the powerful a little more, and everyone else a little less, time after time. And that's how we end up where we are today. An America that's working great for those at the top, just not working for much of anyone else. So the reason I am in this fight is because I know we can fix this. And I want to talk really quickly about three ideas about how to do it. The first one is we've got to attack the corruption head on. We've got to take it on. Now, the good news is I have the biggest anti-corruption plan since Watergate. The bad news is we need the biggest anti-corruption plan since Watergate. It's got a lot of pieces because the influence of money is everywhere in that place, but let me just give you some ideas. First one, end lobbying as we know it. Enough! Block the revolving door between Wall Street and Washington. Work one place or the other. Make the Supreme Court follow basic rules of ethics. Brian, think so? I'll do just one more. Anyone who wants to run for federal office ought to have to put their tax returns online. We ought to be able to see the business connections for everyone. Okay. Attack corruption head on. Part two, we've got to change a couple of basic rules in our economy. And here are the kind of problems we've got. Giant corporations, big ag, big tech, big financial institutions, they just kind of roll however they want to roll. You know? Roll over their own employees? You bet. Roll over their customers? Sure, why not? Roll over the communities where they're located? Yeah, they'll do that. We need structural change, not nibbles around the edge, structural change. And one part of that structural change is more power back in the hands of employees. That means we need to make it easier to join a union, and we need to give unions more power when they're negotiating for employees. Unions built America's middle class, and unions will rebuild America's middle class. That's how I see it. And one more about restructuring the economy. We need everybody to pay a fair share. And for me, that's a 2-cent tax on the biggest estates in this country, the most wealthy fortunes in this country. So here's what I propose. For every fortune above $50 million, okay, someone's accumulated, okay, Some people are nervous, others are not. On the 50 millionth and first dollar, 2 cents. That's all I'm asking for, 2 cents. Pitch in 2 cents for that dollar and every dollar after that. Just so you all know, that would be the top 0.1%. It would affect 75,000 families in this country. 2 cents on your assets. And by the way, anybody in here own a home? Anybody own a home? Homeowners? You've been paying a wealth tax all along. It's just called a property tax. All I'm saying that's different is for the bazillionaires. How about for their property tax, we include the diamonds, the yachts, and the Rembrandts, right? Just include this other kind of property that they've got. We did the biggest asset that most working families have. How about we pick up the portfolios for everyone else? Okay, 2 cents on the dollar for the fortunes above $50 million. Yep, it's a yearly tax every year. Got to do it. Okay, 2 cents on the dollar. And here's what you can do with 2 cents on the dollar. We could pay for, completely pay for, universal child care for every one of our babies age 0 to 5. Universal pre-K for every 3-year-old and 4-year-old in this country. Professional level salaries for all of our child care workers and preschool teachers. I'm not through yet. These are all and. Universal college. No tuition, no fee at our public universities. We can pay for that. One more. And we could cancel student loan debt for 95% of the people who've got student loan debt and still have $1 trillion left over. Think about that. Just that 1-2 cents on the great fortunes. It tells you how far out of balance our economy has become. 2 cents. And that's what we can pay for. So that's part two. Part two is about rewrite a rule in our economy, just a couple of the structural rules in our economy. Part three. Part three is we've got to rewrite the rules to protect our democracy. We've got to be willing to be in this fight. Yes, I want to see a constitutional amendment that protects the right of every American citizen to vote and to get that vote counted. Roll back every one of these voter suppression laws. This is un-American. And just one more, overturn Citizens United. Democracy is not for sale. Three things. That's all I want to do. Just three things. But understand this, for me, they all link to each other. Because ultimately, they're all about opportunity in this country. That's what I want to see. I just want to see all of our kids get a chance. I want to see everybody get a chance to get a decent education. A chance to get a good job, a chance to start a business, a chance to move back to your hometown, a chance to build something going forward, to start a family, a chance. Remember, I'm a special needs teacher. Chance means a lot of things. Opportunity may mean just an opportunity to live independently. I want to see America invest in opportunities for all of our kids. Because here's how I see this. My daddy, he ended up as a janitor. But his baby daughter got an opportunity to become a public school teacher, an opportunity to become a college professor, an opportunity to become a United States senator, and an opportunity to become a candidate for president of the United States. Let's dream big. So thank you. Thank you all. Thank
Elizabeth you. Warren, everybody.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you, guys. You're fabulous, Beth. Thank you. So Marianne's going to do the questions. Who you got,
Well,
Marianne?
I'm going to ask a few people who raise your hand, folks, if you've got a question. So, Margaret, please go ahead.
Hi, Margaret.
Your point number three with voter rights. How do we get publicly funded?
Oh, man.
Yep. and do away with private monies in elections.
So,
that seems to be the underlying problem.
So what you just see, Margaret, is how the three pieces fit together, right? because it's about the corruption. It's about the notion right now that the rich and the powerful get to influence government. They've invested in government, right? In tilting the rules just a little bit their way, a little bit their way, and a little bit their way. So the way I see this is I go after the corruption first. We disrupt the lobbyists. We disrupt how the money flows through Washington. We won't stop it. Just disrupt it. And then we've got the moment. The door opens at that point. We can deliver on just a couple of those economic changes, and it's transformative for millions of people and on democracy. It's going to take the inside game and the outside game. And what I mean by that is it's going to take a president who's willing to get in that fight and, frankly, willing to drag along lots of politicians, including maybe in our own party, as we do this. But it's also going to take the wind in the sails from the outside. Keep in mind, the Republicans could have repealed health care the week after Donald Trump was sworn in. They didn't. And the reason they didn't was not because they didn't have the votes. The reason they didn't because enough people across this country said, you're not going to do this. Now, they're still hacking at it and trying to do it in a million different ways. But I say that by way of saying it matters what we stir people to do. And right now, I think we've got enough people in this country who are alarmed enough about the state of our economy and the state of our democracy, the state of our entire planet, that they're off the sidelines and ready to be in this fight.
How do you get private monies out of this, and how do you decide to publicly fund them? And I don't see that ever being passed by the bodies right now.
But it's both hands. The public funding question, we don't need a constitutional amendment to do that. We can do that without it. There are, even under Citizens United, I've actually done a whole piece around this. There are about 9 different things we can do to push money out of politics, to disrupt it, to deal with dark money, for example, by exposing. We could require that every time someone makes a contribution, the dark money contributions, they have to go online within 45 minutes. That would totally change how this looks. But the other half, when you say I don't ever see it passing, is to say I'm not giving up on this. There are enough people around this country who care that if we've got leadership that's willing to get in the fight and we've got enough people behind it, that's how we're going to make change.
Let's go on to question 2.
Senator, nice to meet you. Hi. I want to thank you. My name's Laura Renault.
Hi, Laura.
Hi. I want to thank you so much for your integrity and for your persistence. Yes. And to be a role model to myself and to my 28-year-old daughter and to people everywhere. I just want to thank you from the bottom of my heart to being in the front line. The question I have is, I'm 60 years old. Uh-huh. I found myself as a single parent in my late 30s, went back to graduate school. I've been working for 20 years, and I still have a ton of student loan debt.
Yep.
I work 1 week to pay back my student loan. Every out of each month.
So 1 out of every 4.
Yeah, basically. And I just, and I do well, I do fine, but I just can't get under the weight of that student loan. I could be putting that money back into the economy. I could get a nice car, a nicer car. I'm driving a 15-year-old car. How do you propose to do that? How do you get those changes made?
Okay. So this is one of those things I just want everybody in here to know. Student loan debt is crushing millions of Americans in this country. 43 million Americans would be affected by my student loan debt cancellation plan. Think about that. So one thing you can do, just for anybody who wants to do this, go to elizabethwarren.com/debt. And just today, while I was at Iowa State, we put up the calculator. So you can put in how much student loan debt you've got and what your income is, and that's how easy it is, and it will tell you how you'll end up on student loan. I had 2 kids do it right in the room and just ask them. One said, I get $50,000 knocked off my student loan debt. The other one said, I would end up debt-free. In fact, about 3 out of 4 people would end up under this plan debt-free. And here's what that means. It matters in individual lives. Right now, there are people who don't buy homes because they're paying hundreds of dollars a month on student loans. People who don't start small businesses because they know you can't start a business, You got to go where it's salaried, where you know you're going to be able to make that student loan payment every month. People who are making choices about their families, about their retirement, about every part of their lives. We end that student loan debt. We cancel that student loan debt. And all of a sudden, folks have got a lot more money in their pockets, and it's folks who spend that money. This is what revitalizes an economy. Not a $1 trillion tax cut for the bazillionaires who aren't buying anything more. It's putting money straight into the pockets of folks like you who can spend it right here in Iowa Falls. And here's the thing. Even if you don't have student loan money, you should care about the effect of this debt on the economy. Because every year that goes by, the interest rates are high enough, the fees are high enough, and the number of people in default, which really accelerates this, is high enough. The student loan debt burden is growing by nearly $100 billion a year, and it's dragging our economy further and further behind. So you want to make a real investment in the future? How about if we just cancel millions of dollars of student loan debt? We can do this. Now, last thing I want to remind you all on this is how to pay for it. Because this is what makes this economically progressive. It's not taxing a bunch of other people who, some didn't go to college. That's not the point of this. This is just to ask for 2 cents from the ultra millionaires. It says on the wealth tax, the great fortunes in this country, 2 cents. And we can afford to do this and pay for it entirely. And understand it. This is not to say to the wealthy, we're trying to be punitive. We want to engage in class war. That's not the point. The point here is to say, you built a great fortune or inherited it, right? But whatever it was, however you ended up with this great fortune, good for you. But keep in mind, that fortune was built, I guarantee, here in America, at least in part, using workers all of us help pay to educate. Getting your goods to market on roads and bridges, all of us help to pay for. Protected by firefighters and police officers, all of us help pay the salaries for. And good for you that you made it super big. But we're just saying, when you make it that super big, could you put in 2 cents? So every other kid gets a chance to make it in this country. So that's what that's about. We're going to do this. We're going to do this. Yep. Okay. This is one we can really do.
You've been listening to Senator Elizabeth Warren at a House Party event in Iowa Falls, Iowa, Saturday, May 4th, 2019.
Thanks to Cal Halliburton for that and for his future reporting on the presidential candidates in Iowa.
Phenology is recording nature's happenings when they occur, the first hepatica of spring or the last robin of autumn are noted in a journal for future reference. Or as Lee Searles puts it, phenology is the natural rhythms of life. Today we'll talk about care of young wildlife. Iowans are being reminded not to rescue wildlife babies. Springtime means baby season for Iowa wildlife, beginning with the first hatch great horned owls in March, on to June when most of the pheasant chicks arrive, and nothing looks more innocent and cute than baby animals. And on occasion, these cute, fluffy, and feathery, and clumsy, and gangly babies are discovered all alone and rescued from their mother in a cardboard box and whisked to the nearest office of the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. While the rescuer may have had the best intentions, they likely have doomed the very animal they aim to save. Many wildlife babies die soon after rescue from the stress of being handled, talked to, and placed into unfamiliar surroundings. Should it survive this trauma, they often succumb more slowly to starvation from improper nourishment, pneumonia, or other human-caused sicknesses. Here's a quote, "All species of wildlife have highly specific needs for survival," said Karen Kincaid, Wildlife Diversity Program Coordinator for the Iowa DNR. "Rescuing a baby from its mother not only shows bad judgment, it's illegal." Most mammals are nocturnal. Mother will hide her young during the day so she can sleep or look for food, so it's perfectly normal for the young to be alone or unattended during the day. Don't assume a fawn or a nest full of baby cottontails or raccoons are orphaned. The transition to independence varies by species, from as little as 4 or 5 days to weeks or even months. Most wildlife babies leave before they can care for themselves. They may become widely scattered during this fledgling period, but remain under the direct care and feeding of their parents. Young birds appear clumsy and vulnerable because they really are clumsy and vulnerable. As the fledging process continues, survivors smarten up fast, while slow learners quickly fade. Most birds have less than a 20% chance of surviving their first year. And that fledging is when they have their first flight or leave the nest. There is one large exception to assisting young wildlife in need. This involves young birds that have fallen from the nest. Returning them to the nest will not cause the mother to reject their young. Birds do not smell, and the birds will not abandon their young when humans touch them. It is a myth that was propagated by our grandparents, I think, so we would leave little birds alone. But you can return all young birds to their nest or above the ground and protect it from marauding cats. So put them in a fork of a tree or make a little platform, and the birds will be just fine. As the morel mushroom season hits full stride, so does the number of calls to the Iowa DNR about abandoned deer fawns. A fawn's self-defense is to remain motionless and blend in with the background vegetation, but that is often mistaken for abandonment. What callers don't realize is that the mother is likely hiding nearby waiting for them to leave so she can resume taking care of her fawn. The Iowa DNR does not rehabilitate or raise wild animals to the point of self-sufficiency. And because of the expanding presence of chronic wasting disease, which is a debilitating disease that there is no cure for, we do not allow deer to be taken to a private rehabilitator to be raised and released, said Tyler Harms, biometrician with the Iowa Department of Natural Resources Wildlife Research Section. Chronic wasting disease is a fatal neurological disease that affects deer, elk, moose, and caribou. In some locations where the disease has been the longest, it is causing population declines. The disease can be spread through saliva, urine, feces, and blood of an infected deer. Once shed into the environment, the infectious agent, a deformed prion protein, can remain viable and infect healthy deer for years. Infected does can pass along the disease to their fawns, if not before birth, afterward, through grooming and close contact. Infected deer may not show symptoms for about 2 years, making the disease difficult to find. There is currently no practical way to test live deer. The only way is to collect tissues of the lymph nodes from a dead deer and submit them to a lab for testing. The Iowa Department of Natural Resources appreciate the passion people have to protect fawns. We have it too, but all it takes is one infected deer to be taken to a pen or other area where it can infect other deer and the environment. Then the likelihood of any healthy deer getting sick at the facility increases dramatically. Harms said the best chance for fawns or baby ducks, raccoons, skunks, and birds to survive is for them to be left alone in the wild. And that's our phenology for today, but enjoy all the wildlife, and hopefully all your favorite species will be within your view this summer and autumn and coming months ahead. It's a great time of year. Just try to respect wildlife and let them be. This is Pat Schlarbaum for KHOY Community Radio, 89.1 FM, Story City, Ames. Cool. This environmental update is sponsored by the Outdoor Alliance of Story County, Story County's Conservation's Friends Group, working to enhance outdoor recreation, education, and conservation. Information can be found at oasco.org.
Thanks to Pat Schlaubaum for that phonology. You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI. I'm your host, Gail Seiler, and we've been joined in the studio by two guests. We have with us Keith Morgan from Story County Emergency Management and Doug Houghton, Support Services Manager with the Ames Police Department. Thanks for coming by today. And today we are going to be talking about the new public safety radio system that will be built here in Story County over the next few years. So let's start by talking about why this project is needed.
Well, the current radio system that we have is about 30 years old. So think back to your cell phone that you had about 30 years ago. That's right. You didn't even have a cell phone. Technology has come a long ways, and also supporting older technology has become more and more difficult. Again, if you had to buy a part for your VHS tape player from 30 years ago, would you be able to find those parts? No. So it's time for Story County to upgrade its system. The other parts are that the system that we have is not a public safety radio. It was actually designed as a commercial radio system, and it was good when it was new, but it's time for us to move on from that.
So what does this system consist of? Is it actual, like, physical infrastructure, or are there non-tangible parts to it as well?
I'm going to pass that on along to the expert on that. That's Doug.
That's Doug.
Yeah, so this will be an interesting project. It involves kind of both ends of what you've described. We'll be building a completely new radio system with five towers around the county to provide really good coverage for emergency responders as they try to access almost anywhere in the county. In addition, we'll be buying all new radios because, as Keith described, those 30-year-old radios that we're carrying just don't have the capabilities of what new radio systems can do. So that's the infrastructure and hardware mm-hmm. side. But we're also creating a whole new system. The county, the city, and the university have come together to create an organization that will manage this new system. So there's the structure that this group, which has adopted the name StoryCom. StoryCom has will develop a set of rules and structures for people who use the radio system to work by, protocols for how to use what to say on the radio, how to use the radio, what channels to use. All those things are kind of in the development stage right now.
So all that will be new as well as the infrastructure.
That's correct. Not only will there be new towers with new wires and new radios, but there'll be a whole new set of rules and structures to work by.
To use that new material. And when you say we, who are you referring to?
You know, really, this is a very much a countywide project. As I said, the three biggest organizations in the county, the City of Ames, Story County itself, and Iowa State University, are kind of the backbone. Those three entities have created StoryCom with the goal of being able to fund the infrastructure. Those three agencies will fund actually building the towers, acquiring the land, setting up the equipment. But then the system will be available to all public entities in the county. Now, the first outreach will be to emergency responders. So to the rural fire agencies, the emergency medical services throughout the county, the two hospitals, all of those agencies will be able to join and actually are planning to join on the new radio system so that we'll be able to develop not only good working relationships but an interoperable system so in a disaster or in an emergency, different agencies can communicate with each other.
So, Keith, last time you were on, you were talking about radio communication to residents and alerting residents. This is different. This is communication between first responders and police departments and so on. Is that correct? This wouldn't go out. This is not communication out to the general public.
Exactly. And it is to allow that communications because some of the problems – obviously, is if you let too many people on the system, then it gets clogged up. This is going to be very targeted information. And a great thing is by us rebuilding this system, we'll be better able to share our resources amongst the different communities should we ever hit that point where the resources in one community are totally used up. Now agencies will be able to come together and work together much, much better, and also across the different disciplines, fire and law enforcement and medical, oftentimes are used to working only in their own channels. This system will allow them to work together during that large-scale disaster and get the resources where they need to go when they need to be there.
You mentioned the entities that will fund it. Mm-hmm. Is that coming out of general budgets, or does additional money need to be obtained to fund this?
So it does vary a little bit between the agencies. The City of Ames, for example, and I believe Story County are both going to do some general obligation bonds to fund the infrastructure. Iowa State's using different kinds of money. You know, their structure's different.
Mm-hmm.
The actual purchase of the radios will be the responsibility of the agency that's going to use them. So across the 14 emergency response agencies in the county, there'll be different methods to try to fund. We are still working on a national fire grant that might help support purchasing some of the radios. We'll know probably in June whether we're able to get the fire grant. That would make a big difference across the county.
And what's the timeline for this whole process of bringing it together and then the actual building and completion of it?
So we started this probably 2.5-3 years ago. Tomorrow morning is our kickoff meeting for the construction projects. We have a rather unique system. The old radio system is going to be phased out towards at the end of June 2020. So the vendor for the new radio system is going to construct a temporary radio system that will carry us through until the permanent system is built.
Wow.
So the temporary system will be up and running before the end of 2019 or maybe into January of 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And then the permanent radio system, the goal for that is at the end of 2020, beginning of 2021, so 18 months.
So this is quite a complex process, not a simple transition.
That's very true. It's going to be a very busy 18 months. The next 6 months, we'll be asking all of those agencies across the county that plan to be part of the system to evaluate new radios and purchase new radios, get them programmed, get trained, and be ready to use them.
And the coordination of all this is coming out of your office, Keith, or yours, Doug?
Well, it's really coming out of the StoryCom group.
Okay.
So the coordinated efforts of the three larger agencies. There's a smaller group. We refer to ourselves as the working group, made up of representatives from Fire and Ames and Story County and the university. And we're kind of the group that's working with first with the vendor, Raycom, out of Marshalltown, and second with a professional consulting organization that we've hired out of Pennsylvania called Mission Critical Partners. So the three of us, three groups are working together to coordinate the efforts.
What would you say will be some of the benefits to the community when this is in place?
The list is long. You know, the first and foremost, the important issues that we were driving at were communication. So coverage, our ability to be able to talk to emergency responders, whether they're in a small building, way out in the county in the middle of nowhere, or in a building on campus or in the middle of the city. So coverage was a key element, and the improvement there will be significant.
Mm-hmm.
Will be a very resilient system so that if a piece of the system were to fail, the rest of the system will continue to operate. So we don't have a situation where you suddenly run out of coverage because a controller at a tower failed. If that happens, another piece will pick up the equipment and keep it running. And then I think third is this interoperability concept that we'll be able to bring together, as Keith said, both jurisdictions and disciplines to deal with an emergency situation wherever it might occur.
what kinds of emergencies will it be used for? Can you give us maybe just a few examples?
I guess the thing to say is this is an everyday project. So when the responders come to your house because somebody was creeping around in your backyard, or they come to your business because somebody had a heart attack, or a train derails and we have to evacuate a whole neighborhood inside of Ames, this radio system will be used every day for every response that emergency responders make.
So more localized responses, as you described, but also bigger responses like tornadoes or storm damage or closing the highway, which I know Keith has talked about, closing Route 35, which you've talked about previously.
And also another way that this translates into a benefit is our first responders are going to be a lot safer, because now they know that they will have the coverage. If one of them should be hurt or injured someplace, they know that when they activate their radio, they will be able to get hold of somebody and they'll be able to come together and try and take care of each other. Because there have been quite a few gaps in the current system mm-hmm. that we have, and this will be plugging it, especially out in the rural area. Another great benefit, especially in the rural areas, is we're also enhancing our paging system. So those rural departments that depend on those volunteers who wear a pager, they'll now be much more likely to ensure that they get that page to be able to respond as a volunteer, go to the fire department, get their equipment, and get on out to those people that have been injured. So another great benefit of this system, both systems were at the end of their life expectancy, and both of them needed to be upgraded, so we're taking advantages of that. Some other great advantages are flexibility in the system. If they need to reprogram this system, they'll be able to do that without everybody bringing their radios in. And also,
because it's kind of computerized?
It's much more
digital,
computerized.
Yeah.
Exactly. Okay. And for very special situations, they'll also be able to enhance the security of the radio system. So a lot of things that we've needed for a long, long time are finally coming together with this upgrade.
So this is really an example of something that, as people who live in the area, might not even be aware of, A, that this system currently exists, B, that it needs to be upgraded, and how their safety will be enhanced once it is upgraded.
And also, these entities working together, Iowa State been a great partner on this. They had an expertise when it came to contracting. They contributed to that. Fire Department in Ames has been doing a lot of research. They were the main driving force for the submitting for that grant. All of the agencies are come together, and you don't see that across a lot of the other counties that are out there. And it is something that I think folks here in Story County really need to know about and need to be pleased with, that all of their entities are working together. One of my mantras is efficient and effective, and this is an example of where we're coming together to drive down the cost, increase the capabilities, and do what we need to for the folks in Story County.
Do other counties in Iowa have such an advanced system like this?
Yes. Actually, one of the reasons we chose this particular vendor is that the counties to the east of us, almost all of the counties to the east of us, including the larger Johnson, Lynn, Blackhawk counties, have purchased this same system, and once we get up and running, one of the elements we'll be able to do is tie together with that larger system so that we'll have radio coverage clear to the Mississippi River.
I was going to ask about that, if it will allow communication with surrounding counties.
Yeah, and actually, one of the reasons to move to this public safety-based radio system is not only will we be able to talk to people around the state, but after Katrina, there were some national standards adopted. So our new radios will also have national interoperable channels. So if there was to be a huge disaster where we were even bringing in federal resources, we'd have the capability to even speak with those folks.
And at this time, is there any way that people can get more information or have input into the development of this public safety radio system?
That's an interesting question. This has been so technical for mm-hmm. so long. We're just now reaching the point where we'll be reaching out to the larger population to tell them what we're doing and where mm-hmm. it's going. I guess I would encourage folks who are interested in getting more information or in participating in the process to talk to their local fire agency or EMS agency, because mm-hmm. those folks have been involved with us on an ongoing basis. And if they don't have the answers to the questions, they know who to get a hold of to help get those answers.
Okay. Thank you very much for coming in and telling us about this. It sounds like it's an important improvement for our community. As always, we're now better informed about it than we were before.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Appreciate being here.
I've been speaking with Keith Morgan, Director of Story County Emergency Management, and Doug Houghton, Support Services Manager with the Ames Police Department. This is KHOI Community Radio, and you've been listening to Local Talk. I've been your host, Gail Seiler. Local Talk is broadcast at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. on Monday, Wednesday, and 7 a.m., noon, and 5 p.m. on Friday. You can also listen to our shows online at khoifm.org. Local Talk was engineered by Cynthia McClure. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Remember, Bike to Work Week is this week, and the kickoff breakfast is going on right now at Ames City Hall. If you enjoyed the show, tell a friend. Your participation as audience and supporter is what makes KHOI possible and meaningful. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.